expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, because He is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. That's some tough stuff when you look at that. Woo! Yeah. So, I got a lot of work to do. Anyway, here's the Message version. Every once in a while, I like the Message version. It kind of gives me just kind of a different flavor. To you who are ready for the truth, I say, love your enemies, let them bring out the best in you, not the worst. That's the part I like. When someone gives you a hard time, respond with the supple moves of prayer for that person. If someone slaps you in the face, stand there and take it. If someone grabs your shirt, gift wrap your best coat and make it a present. If someone takes unfair advantage of you, use the occasion to practice the servant life. No more payback, live generously. Here is a simple rule of thumb for behavior. Ask yourself what you want people to do for you. Then grab the initiative and do it for them. If you only love the lovable, do you expect a pat on the back? That's why I like this version. What do you think? Want a pat on the back? Run-of-the-mill sinners do that. If you only help those who help you, do you expect a medal? Garden variety sinners do that. If you only give for what you hope to get out of it, do you think that's charity? The stingiest of pawnbrokers does that. I tell you, love your enemies. Help and give without expecting a return. You'll never, I promise, regret it. Live out this God-created identity the way our Father lives toward us, generously and graciously, even when we're at our worst. Our Father is kind. You be kind. Anyway, I kind of grabbed my attention last night when I was studying for this, because I'm still trying to answer those questions. Anyway, one of the things that we have done, just kind of real fast repeat, in this section we're talking about attitudes, we're talking about conflict. And will there be conflict in life? Yes. What we do with it is really a big deal, how we deal with conflict and how you learn from it and all that stuff. We talked about Romans 12, 1 through 8, that what we do is an act of worship, one another, love one another, lead a peaceful life, which is sometimes kind of hard. Philippians 2 talks about being humble. We talked about beliefs, feelings, and behaviors. The behaviors is what we see, based on the belief systems we have. Then we started talking about if you have conflict with somebody, you look at the scripture and it tells you what you need to do. But the first thing is go to Matthew 7, 3 through 5. Someone read that for me. Matthew 7, 3 through 5.
Why do you look at the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me check the speck, take the speck out of your eye, behold, the log is in your own eye?
Yeah, just a 5. We're going to go, yeah.
First take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye.
So, what grabs you out of that so far? We'll go venture further with that one. What grabs you out of that one to begin with?
Focus on other people and worry about ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. Focus on others. Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, that gets to the section that we were talking about before I was so rudely interrupted last Sunday with that bell. Is the area of before you do all these things, because it tells us in Scripture that if somebody offends you or you have conflict, you have to go to them. But first, and I thought this was good advice, good wisdom. And Matthew 7 talks about that. is the idea that you need to spend some time self-reflecting, thinking about it. Because all of us are sinners, you know, but we need to start checking ourselves, you know. Because if you're going to go to that person, why are you going to that person? I have to ask myself that question. And before I can go to that person, then maybe I need to spend some time going back to Philippians 2, talking about being humble, and start checking myself, my self-reflection. Oh, how am I doing? You know, what part of it was my responsibility? What part of it was my fault? All those hard things to figure out lots of times. You heard my story last week about when I was working at MHMR and they done me wrong big time. But I took some of these scriptures and was going through that. And Janine knows the story, obviously. And then I went to my boss and his boss and asked for their forgiveness of what I had done to make their life more difficult. Obviously, I made their life more difficult because they were throwing me under the bus. But if I was being mediocre, I guess I would not have been. I don't know. But I had to work through that process. And so looking at that, I had to have a check on myself, what was going on internally with me, what was going on in my head, what was going on in my heart, what was going on with all these things. You know, and like I said, I'd been there a lot of years. And did I know where all the skeletons were buried? Absolutely. That I did. But that wasn't the right thing to do. So just don't go down that road. So when you get into that world and you look at fault finding and harshness and anger and all those kind of things, one of the things I had to start realizing, and I didn't clean it up the first, I did some, but it went on for a while, even after I asked for their forgiveness. And no, they did not ask for my forgiveness. They just thought they were doing what they were supposed to be doing. But that wasn't my issue. That was their issue with them and God themselves. And deal with that. Did I have lingering issues with that? Absolutely. Something I have to work on. It's more of an end. It's more of a process when you get into that kind of thing. Hence the reason why I was wrestling with the idea of forgiveness and unforgiveness last night when I was going over this lesson and going through that stuff. So first I have to take an assessment of myself and trying to figure out, okay, what do I need to do? Is it something that is happening to me? And there's that word me. Is it happening to me? Or is it something I can live with? Is it something that I just can't live with for and it's causing some conflict? Of course, if you have the conflict, you're talking about a disruption in the relationship already when you have that going on. So what's the next step? As we didn't already know. Go to Romans 12, 18 before we start this next part, which means go to your brother. Before we do that, Romans 12, 18. Someone read that for me. Romans 12, 18. Live at peace with everyone. What grabbed you out of that? I mean, we talked about unity, we talked about attitude, we talked about all these things. Possible, if it's possible, yeah.
Everything is possible with God.
Yeah, there you go. So if you're trying to live at peace, okay, and if you live at peace when you get into relationships, I'll get to that in a bit, so. Like I said, my mind goes 500 different directions when I look at that. Okay, the Bible says go. Doesn't say do about it. It doesn't say all these things, you know. You know, and there's oftentimes when you're faced with a conflict, depending on your personality style and things like that, either you're going to head on into it, you know, as talked about last time, I'm one of those ready, aim, then fire. That's what I mean. That's me. I've known people in my lifetime that were ready, fire, aim. So live at peace is one of the things like that. So there's different styles of people out there. Some people are really good at confronting people with things. And somebody sometimes just like to avoid things because I want to cause a fuss and all like that. So you're just trying to, maybe it didn't happen, or, you know, trying to avoid the conflict. But what does God say? Go to Matthew 18:15. Matthew 18:15. There you go. So what grabs you out of that? I mean, there's several things you can unpack in that scripture, but... Because you're developing, it's a relationship's a big deal, yeah. Do it face to face, but don't make a big deal. Don't do this major drama thing or whatever you want to call it. Those kind of things, yeah. That's the first step. Yeah. What else did you get out of that? What does it say in the last part of that? Exactly. So what is really the point of this process, if you think of thinking it through a little bit? Is it to get your way?
Peace.
Peace. It's reconciling the relationship. It's about the relationship. Yeah. And so... Exactly. Yeah. So when we look at that, it just kind of makes sense that you have to initiate it, but it doesn't sound like you have to go in like a herd of bulls or like that, you know, like some people might do, and or don't avoid it like some people like to do, things like that, you know, but you can go into it. Matthew 5, 23 through 24. There's another example that's telling us that what we should be doing. Matthew 5, 23 through 24. Somebody read that for me. Matthew 5, 23, 24. So, what do you get out of that?
You know you've done something, you need to
fix it. This is where that unforgiveness thing's a two-edged sword. Goes both ways. Because one of the things I had to learn with my unforgiveness, even though reading about some of the psychology of forgiveness and some of the research they're doing on this, which is pretty interesting, obviously I would say that, is that, you know, it's a process, and they have split it out into what they call decisional forgiveness and emotional forgiveness, which I thought was a pretty good distinction, looking at my example, or looking at me anyway, because you can decide, I go, and I, in love, and I'm coming and trying to make amends with the person, like that. That's my decision. Okay, that's a decisional thing I'm gonna make. Trying to forgive them and all that kind of stuff. But do my emotions really tag along with that decision, or does it linger a bit? I know what my answer is. It lingers a bit, and it just stirs it back up again. And so that's why I think that was a good distinction between, I know I need to do this, I'm going to do it, but man, they had done me wrong. It's like an old country music song, you know, they done me wrong. It just keeps going. You know, and I struggle with that one because I know that I got to go and know I got to do it. I go do it, but I'm still kind of in that weird world, and I'll get to come up. But go. But what has it done to me, according to the scripture, as far as me being able to talk to God? What has it done to me in my offering gifts to God if I do not forgive?
Receiving and granting forgiveness, they both take a fair bit of humility.
Oh, yeah.
We don't like to be wrong.
Especially in our society. Yeah. Because if you look at the business world, you look at it like that, the whole idea is, you know, I'm the one who knows the most. You know, I'm the one who's going to give you the answers. I'm the one who, we get the idea of competing mixed up with, I think, in the world according to me, we get the idea of competing from sports into the business world. I don't think competing in the business world should be the same thing as sports, but that's just me. Sports is you're developing skill. That's the way I look at it. You're doing well, and you come up top, but you're doing really well. But you're playing as a team, if it's a team thing. If you are doing this in the business world and you're always going to get right, always going to get right, that kind of destroys relationships, I think. Because there's always going to be a win-lose thing in that business relationship, I think. That's just me thinking. Yeah, it's got to be give and take. You have to be give and take. Yeah. 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 And that's what relating back and forth, relationships, relating back and forth kind of thing. So we have to initiate it. We have to self-reflect. Once again, think about it, because you got to look at your motivation. What's driving you to do what you're doing? And because we are called to maintain the peace, lead a peaceful and orderly life, you go back to Proverbs and you look at the comparison. A person who's not peaceful causes disorder and all that stuff. People are peaceful lives. Things are a little smoother in life, things like that. But also, I keep going back to what are we learning from this process in looking like that. Being a peacemaker, even if you think that you didn't do anything wrong, should I do that? I can't answer for everybody. I know what I have to do, so things like that. Because this approach is very countercultural to what our culture is like. And because you don't want anybody to get one over on you. How many times have we heard that? You know, I don't want anybody to take advantage of you, this and that, whatever those words we're talking about. But in order to go to that person in the right mindset, if I'm going to a person who's offended me and I go into that mindset, it's pretty risky. Pretty vulnerable kind of thing. In our world, people will see that as maybe a weakness. Kind of like the humility thing. The more I study it, the more I realize. Because lots of times when in our secular world, people look at the idea of humility and thinking that you're weak. You have no backbone. You're like milk toast, whatever other words out there for that kind of thing. But if you really study it and you really pay attention to it, it takes a lot more guts to be humble than it does not to be. Yeah, and I think the same thing with risky and vulnerable behaviors being risky. You know, risking me talking to my boss and his boss about, you know, asking their forgiveness. Very uncomfortable. So I felt a lot better afterwards But I was still working on that emotional thing. That was my decision to do that kind of thing. But the emotional part, as Janine can tell you, just kind of lingered for a bit. And every once in a while it pops up in my head because it'll be a trigger of some sort that'll trigger that kind of thing when I'm looking at that. So I go back again, going back to my reflection of why I'm doing these things. Why am I going to this person? Am I going there to declare war? You know, I'm gonna take you off at the knees kind of thing. I got all my ideas right up here and all that, and I'm just going to take you out. Yeah, then I have to go back to the reflection part again. Why am I doing this kind of thing? And acknowledging what I'm doing. And so I think that's a big thing. So go to Galatians 6 again. So if I'm looking at my attitude, which I have to do quite a bit, Galatians 6th chapter, starting with verse 1. Brothers, if anyone is caught in a sin, you who are spiritual should restore him gently, but watch yourself, or you also may be tempted. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. If anyone thinks he has something when he has nothing, he deceives himself. Each one should test his own actions, then he can take pride in himself without comparing himself to somebody else, for each one should carry his own load. And then it goes on. Therefore, we have opportunities. Let us do good to all people, especially to those who belong to the family of believers. So if I take all these scriptures together, I got to self-reflect, I got to check my motives and all that stuff, then I need to go. I need to initiate this process with a humble heart and go in and try to deal with that, but go in love. Is that an easy thing? Anybody have any stories to share with that one? Is it an easy thing? Or do anybody have a story about when they've done that?
Not, we're all proud we've never done that.
Not that I want to admit. I got you. Yeah. And so, you know, and there's this one particular situation I keep talking about. It occasionally will raise some concerns. Just like anything in the world of trauma, when you do the research in trauma, like that stuff, you know, it kind of sticks in the brain. There's pathways that stick in the brain. And all it does is something will trigger it and pops up again. That's what it does. And so that's the one I don't, not as much as I used to, but every once in a while when I'm at work, something will happen. I go like, yeah, the fight or flight thing kicks in real fast. And yeah. So anyway, okay. Since nobody wants to share a story, I'll move on.
Yeah. I forgive you.
Yeah.
If there's something that needs fixing, then you find a way to
gotta restore it. Yeah. Because once again, the whole idea of conflict or conflict resolution in this kind of concept is not to prove that you are right. or prove the other person is wrong, or air your feelings, although you can do that in a nice way, you know, because that's how you have to communicate. This is what happened. This is how I feel about it. But the motive has to be restoration, has to be reconciliation, is to bring that relationship back in peace alignment again. Because once again, we're talking about living in peace with everybody.
Kids. There's a possibility when you go to someone, they deny that anything is wrong or anything is going on.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You know, that because that's just difficult for some people.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, really?
Yeah. Now you're all mad all again, all over again. Said it was important to me. Why is it not important to you? Yeah. Yeah.
I've been fretting about this for weeks and you didn't even know it.
Yeah. What's that?
Takes them off the defensive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it does. Yeah. Because the whole idea, once again, is not to see who won. The whole idea is to see, is to try to restore that relationship if you can. Like I said, it's possible, if it's possible. It may not be possible. But the point is, you've done as much as you can because of your self-reflecting on what you're doing. Then you've done everything that you can that's possible to maintain the peace. And, you know, this old adage and a lot of change psychology like that is whatever I do usually doesn't change somebody, but what has to change is me. Same kind of concept. Yeah.
I got to thinking in the sermon this morning.
Yeah.
There's a trick to knowing when it's time to start turning tables over.
It is, yeah. When is it right to be angry? Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously, there's a time.
Yeah.
Figuring that time out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's difficult. You know, when you look at all the different wars and all the things that were sanctioned by God as far as wiping out groups of people and all that stuff, there's a time for that. But I think one of the threads that I saw in that was that they were so contrary to God and his plan.
It was not about him. It was about what, how that was going to affect.
Yeah, it's what they were doing to the people, yeah. The taking advantage of people and then, but also doing this while they're doing that. Yeah. I'm offering you this service.
He could have walked in and said, you know who I am, don't you? I'm the Son of God, don't you? Don't
yeah.
You recognize that?
Exactly. Yeah. In one word. Yeah. But the whole idea was, I think also, is to let them know that what they were doing was contrary. Because he was a Pharisee himself. I mean, he had that knowledge. A lot of times, yeah, lots of times we don't say that, but yeah. So he knew more than they did because he knew how the law was supposed to be and all that kind of stuff. And he said, you're all doing wrong. Yeah. On so many levels. That's what he's saying. Yeah. Yeah. And so when I look at that, I kind of, yeah, okay. But I really have to put myself in check a lot of times because I tend to be passive aggressive. I'm just that way. So she's not paying attention. So nothing. You're so beautiful. You're so beautiful. I said I tend to be passive aggressive.
Nah.
So I have to really watch it with my mindset and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, passive aggressive is I never know if he's being passive aggressive or he's just not paying attention.
So that's all you think about, passive aggressive. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, I got
to
work on that. I didn't say it. Anyway, so you go to this person or you go to group whoever, you've been offended or you have this conflict. You have in disorder or unpeacefulness with this relationship, basically, is what I'm seeing when I read through all this kind of stuff. And it's causing you some unrest, okay? You know, and once again, maybe they may not have a clue what you're upset about. And they're going like, I don't know what you're talking about. So you have to explain it to them, and they're going like, still don't know what you're talking about. Well, I still have to take care of it because it's causing me unrest. And from my point of view, especially if I'm, you know, having this issue with it, I'm unsettled with certain things, then I have to make it smooth out. It's my responsibility in doing that, I think. So, anybody agree, disagree?
Unforgiveness blocks your ability to forgive with God. And so, whether they know or don't know, offense or something you thought was done to you or you did to them,
right.
Irregardless, you still have to deal with it.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, and hopefully we're grasping that when we're doing our self-reflection part, when we're doing that part of it all.
It's a lot healthier.
Yeah, it is a lot healthier. You know, and when you look at, okay, since you brought it up. There is ton of research that proves that if you're mad all the time and you're upset all the time, we call it type A behavior in psychology, because they're all stirring up all of that. Things are always stirred up inside the body, which once again, if you follow that kind of stuff, you know that stirs up and that stirs the inflammation in your body, which leads to all these other health issues that you can have, whether it's high blood pressure or whether it's heartburn or what, all those things are all related to this idea of things staying stirred up, which is the anger. And when they look at that research, they found that one key element in those folks is the anger. It all relates to, and it all translates into some kind of health stuff eventually. It just does. And when they do that, and of course, then they do the research where they take a type A person and teach them these skills on how to chill a little bit. And what they've done with people who have not do this, and I'll go back to the scripture, since you brought it up, is they've looked at these people that had heart attacks. Excuse me. Put them in two different groups. One group stayed the same. This is how I'm going to do it. I don't care what you tell me. This is how I'm going to do it. And they stayed type A. They took the other group, taught them how to chill out, how to meditate, things like that. Something like that. When they went back and looked at subsequent heart attacks years later, the group that learned the skills had fewer subsequent heart attacks than the type A. The group says, I'm not going to do anything about it. So, go figure. Anyway, since you brought it up. Okay. So, you go, and things are still unsettled. And so what do we do next? So go to Matthew 18. Matthew 18, 15 through 17. Someone read that for me, please. Matthew 18, 15 through 17.
Okay.
So this is that second step we talked about. You go to the person in private, alone. You're trying to reconcile. You're trying to smooth things out with this person so you can restore the relationship. And it still doesn't happen. So you did not, if you have not gained your brother, if this does not, if he does not listen, take one or two others along with you. It's the next step in the conflict of this kind of thing. So why are you going to bring somebody along now? Okay. So it adds to your witness story. Okay.
Jim and I were actually members of a church up in Broken Arrow that withdrew membership from a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll never forget that.
Yeah. I've seen that once in my lifetime, and I've heard lots of stories in my lifetime related to that. And it makes me wonder. Let me put it that way. It makes me wonder. Because I don't know the whole story. It just makes me wonder. How was the approach? How was the... I knew of this one story of a church that was withdrawn this years and years ago. Withdrew from this one man because he was having an affair with another woman and like that. And the church says, came in there and he says, "I don't care." He said, "I'm not coming back to church anyway." But I'm trying to figure out when I read that story was, once again, makes me wonder what was the approach and those kind of things. That's just me thinking about it. It's one of the things I learned often the hard way when I worked at St. Angelo State School for a number of years. I worked as a person who worked on the grounds and service assistant, did everything from the bedpans all the way up, okay? And then that's while I was going to school. Got to school, got the psychologist position, all that stuff, and then all of a sudden, just back before cell phones, I got the pager thing. The pager go off 500 times a day. So-and-so's not putting their socks on. What do we do? You know, that kind of stuff. But one of the things that's why I wonder, is because one of the things I learned by being in the trenches and doing that like that, that if, in order to handle behavioral issues, which was primarily one of my jobs, was the approach was significant. You know, there were certain clients, that's what we called them back then, certain clients that you had to be very direct with. That's the approach that worked best with them. And there's others that if you were direct with them, man, the fight was on. So you had to go a smoother way. But you had to learn all that. So that's why I say I kind of wonder, because I don't know the whole story.
Well, yeah. You know, we were only there, 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. I don't know.
You don't know the answer.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter, but you do wonder.
Yeah.
That's the only time we've ever experienced.
Yeah. That's why I keep wondering. I think if you go back to Galatians 6 again, and you approach it from that point of view, because it says, "Brothers, if someone is caught in a sin, You who are spiritual, so that means you have to do some self-reflection on that part. Because you consider yourself spiritual, are you doing it spiritually, yes or no, kind of thing. That's how I'm reading it anyway. Should restore him gently.
Restore him gently.
Restore him gently, which is part of the fruit of the Spirit. Gentle, okay. But watch yourself.
You look at it, yeah, and you realize it starts very privately.
Yeah. That was bad.
Yeah. You were ignored. You were not existing. And I think as a Christian, if my church family started ignoring me, that would definitely get my attention.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we, you know, some of this where you think secular relationships. But in the church family, it needs to be something that's affecting you. Not just you, but your family.
Yeah. Which goes back to 1 Corinthians 12. We're one body.
Because, yeah, you know, you don't want a little thing. Yeah, a little thing to give them.
Yeah.
Unless,
yeah,
you look at me, buddy. I'm mad.
If your objective is to bring them back to Christ,
that's right.
Punish them is not the answer.
Mm-mm.
Make them want to be come back and be a part,
yeah,
of it. And if you,
yeah,
treat them that way, why would they want to come back?
Exactly, which goes back to my, yeah, big question that I keep trying to ask myself. What is it with a church family that people say, I just got to be there? And one of those is this concept right here, is that when we see something that we think's amiss, we try to restore them gently. It's not, I'm cutting you loose and I'm out of here, I'm not going to deal with it. But we prize the relationship, we prize the family, we prize the unity, we prize all these things. And that in itself is what you're trying to get back to, that peaceful restoring part, you know.
You're doing it with tears in your eyes.
Yeah.
Because, mm-hmm, you don't, you're cutting off a part of your body, and,
yeah,
that hurts.
Yeah. It is, yeah. You know, you remember a while back I was talking about the levels of choices, levels of engagement, rebel and quit, malicious obedience, willing compliance, cheerful cooperation, heartfelt commitment, and creative excitement. The creative excitement level, to me, is what I call the abundance living. Because the more I do it, the more everybody else does. The more I do it, the more you do it. And it just builds on the life. And that's what you're trying to restore, I think. Because if you get into a win-lose situation, somebody's going to lose. That's the way it's set up. So if you try to do a win-win, as they call it, or are you trying to restore? It cracks me up. Absolutely. Absolutely. Pure joy there. But you're wanting to restore, you know, and that's, I think that's a big issue in trying to keep everything together. If you have some disagreements, if you have things that are, have you unsettled, you got to resolve that, whether we like to or not. Yeah.
I've got a story. I've told it recently, and I don't know if it was here or not. But years ago, I grew up working in my dad and uncle's grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that way that we did it was the way to do it. A few years later, I went to work for a supermarket.
Right.
And I was assigned a couple of aisles, and care of those aisles the way I always had,
right,
the way I had been taught.
Mm-hmm.
And the manager walked up and said, "We don't front." And I didn't know what he was talking about because we never called it fronting. We called it, you know, facing the shelves up to make it
right.
So it didn't take. I didn't know what he was talking about. But I don't know if it was later that day or another day, the assistant manager said, "Can I talk to you in the office for a little bit?" And we sat up there and we talked, I don't know how long.
Mm-hmm.
But when we got through, I knew what the first policy was, okay, taking care of your shelves. And I was back down there working on my shelf before I realized I had been chewed out.
Yeah, it is. But what really happened also in that exchange was a relationship. It was be developing right there. And I think that's key to a lot of things that we try to do. And trying to restore or reconcile, what are we trying to do? Or just trying to get settled, peaceful, in what we're trying to do with that. And I think that's what sets us apart, because we're willing to put that in, our effort into it, instead of just out, because they know that this is the body and that we're all one body and we're trying to work down that road as much as we can, if we can. So, reflect, you go to the person, do it privately, you know, humbly, all that stuff. It didn't work. You bring a couple of folks in with you to kind of help with that, help with the witness thing. You do also, when you have more people, I think you have more more ideas going on, because when you look at the world of social psychology and group dynamics and all that kind of stuff, people tend to be more compliant. It's not the word. I'm more conforming. If a bunch of people are saying this is what the word is saying, and the other person says it's not, but if you have one on one, it's like one against one. But if you have more than that, then hopefully, if you're restoring them gently, then maybe that's helping with the process as well. Now, does that mean you bring any old person with you? Not really. Yeah. Yeah. But watch yourself. Yeah, that's it right there. Bring somebody's unbiased. You bring somebody with some wisdom, basically, is what you're looking for. And so that's when you get into what you're calling, what I call mediation. So you go to the next level if you need to. Go to mediation and say, can we work this out? And what's the purpose of mediation, once again?
Reconcile.
Yeah, reconcile. Once again, that's the whole purpose of when we do conflict and we're trying to resolve it, the whole idea is trying to restore, trying to reconcile, trying to make sure we're all together on this, as much as we can be, you know. Yeah. And I'm not going to go that way. So anyway, I was going to bring up an example, but I'm not going to use that one. So,
well, sometimes it's not a good idea. If it's a particularly emotional or volatile situation, I see it from my point of view, mm-hmm.
Right.
The mediator helps you see that because they're not so emotionally involved.
Yeah. You know, and the nice thing about mediation also, if you have someone who's trained enough to do that, is that, and I do this as well as most people do, is that if you're arguing with somebody, are you really listening to them when you're arguing, or are you just trying to formulate how you're going to go?
Yeah.
Exactly. which goes back to, this is how I feel about it. I don't care about you. This is how I feel about it.
Sometimes your judgment is so clouded by your own emotion, you can't see what the other guy's dealing with.
Yeah, because you're not. And so a mediator can kind of piece this together and kind of, I'd say it's 100%, but, you know, at least you have somebody who's looking at it more objectively from that viewpoint and going from there and trying to piece us in and trying to, because the whole, once again, the whole point of mediation and this is to reconcile, to restore, to have some peace, be unsettled about, you know, settled about something that's unsettling. And you try to do the best as possible as you can, because it still may be, you know, have you ever had a argument with somebody and you never could get it reconciled? That's the example I was going to use. As you can tell by the tone, we still haven't reconciled it very well. Somehow I don't think that one's ever going to get reconciled. But we've got it reconciled to the point where she has her part, I have my part, and we know that's where it stops. and we just don't bring it up much. That's why I wasn't going to bring it up. But since you brought it up. Anyway. Yeah, be nice to me. It's my birthday, yeah. Anyway. I think it's either one. It's I've seen in my lifetime where I have restored ones that have conflict and ones that I've finally made myself do it, and that has restored itself. But I've others who, because I can only deal with what I can deal with. You know, this is, I have to deal with my part, my heart, my self-reflection part. If they see it and they, you know, try to deal with it and they restore themselves, great. And then your relationship, your story, it's going to take a while, because it gets back to that when you talk about the forgiveness thing, you talked about the decisional forgiveness versus emotional forgiveness. This is that I may decide to do it. I know it's the right thing I got to do, but I'm still torqued about it. And that's the emotional part that I have to deal with. And it may take a while. You know, even though I started on the path anyway. Yeah.
At the end of the day, if you've gone and you've apologized to someone for something you've done, you've done what you can do.
Yeah.
Forgiveness is in their camp.
Mm-hmm.
And we've all been there, done that.
Yeah.
You know, I have a close friend that I apologize for something that happened.
Yeah.
She has nothing to do with it.
Just flat won't.
Breaks my heart.
Yeah. You've done the best you can. And I was a witness to those apologies. So, yeah.
Do what?
That's because she's got something in her head she's feeling guilty about.
I
guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think sometimes restoration has to take place in a different place.
Yeah.
I'll do better, but I can't do better with you.
Yeah.
I've got to go somewhere else.
Yeah. But you really, for lack of other words, you have to clear your conscience of it anyway. To deal with that.
I stand before God, he'll say, yeah. You tried.
You gave your best shot. Yeah.
You were wrong in what you did, but you came and you said, I'm really sorry I did that.
Yeah.
And that's what I called you to do.
Which goes back to the Romans, where we're talking about as peaceful as possible. Yeah. And sometimes it's not, but mediation, I think, is a good thing. If somebody, and I've offered that a couple of times in my lifetime, is if you can't resolve something, I'd be happy to mediate a process for you. not to say I'm a world-class mediator, but I'm willing to give it a shot and try to deal with it that way. So there are ways to deal with it in the family unit, but the whole point also is to restore, to reconcile, and to have oneness of the family again. That's the whole point. And that, I think that's just crucial to the whole point. When we're talking Ephesians, he says you make every effort to have unity. Make every effort, not just a little bit. Make every effort to do like that. Okay? Buzzer, I got rudely cut off again, so. Anyway, I'm going to talk. This leads into my next part, which I'll talk about next week, is talking about the world of unforgiving and forgiveness. We're going to get into that world a little bit more. Okay? See you next Sunday.